Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka on 99.9 for Cricket Every Day. My name is Mark Machado from the Murray End, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Varzi Devon from the Papere. Sri Lanka on 99.94 is your new home for Sri Lankan content. We drop it into your podcast feed and on YouTube and the 99.94 app several times every week. So do please rate, review and subscribe. Thanks for joining Cricket's Conversation. Estelle, I'm very excited today because we're talking about one of Sri Lanka's top up-and-coming young players. That's Charith Asalanka. And you know where I'm going to have to start this, don't you?
What?
I'm going to have to start. We're going to have to go back to his school days, right? When he was in that extraordinary... He wasn't just in that extraordinary Richmond College team. He was the captain, right?
He was the captain, yeah. Just that kind of golden era from Richmond where they had Vanindu, Kamindu, Dhananjay Lakshan, just, I don't know. I'm sure most of the people who are listening to this would have probably seen that picture with all those players in one of their magazines. Just an incredible lineup of players, and he was captain, under-19 captain as well. And I remember, I think, I'm not sure about the year, was it 2014-15 where he captained Sri Lanka under-19s, but there was a lot of chat around him during that time, like, this guy is going to be really something for Sri Lanka. And then kind of, I think his vice-captain in the side, Samu Ashan, kind of overshadowed him a little bit with some performances at the domestic level and also Sri Lanka A emerging teams, but once given his chance, he's been exceptional. And I will say how Mark feels about Dunit Velalage is how I feel about Charith Asalanka. I love him. He's just one of the players I would love to see really do well for Sri Lanka.
And I think what's exciting from our perspective as well is that we kind of, you know, I've been a journalist since before Asalanka was in school, but I'm not really focused on cricket, not really focused on Sri Lankan cricket. I started focusing on Sri Lankan cricket around the time he started to come into focus for national selection, right? Which was a couple of years ago after kind of the pandemic. I think what's interesting about his career, opposed to maybe some of his other peers, is that he wasn't thrown in as a youngster I'm going to rephrase that. Is that I think actually Sri Lankan cricket have done quite a good job handling his career, and they didn't burn him out as a youngster, and I think that's what makes him such an exciting player now, right?
Well, yes and no. I think you're right. They didn't kind of chuck him in at the age of 19 or 20, like say someone like Avishka Fernando. But he did come in at a very, very difficult stage. Debuted that famous series in England, and boy, he looked really out of his depth in that series. A lot of people who watch that series and haven't seen a lot of Sri Lanka cricket since then would really genuinely be surprised that this is the same player, because he looked so out of his depth in that series. Where, let's be honest, Sri Lanka didn't look like they were at a level that should be competing with teams like England.
Yeah, Sri Lanka in general looked out of their depth in that series. I think he made his debut in Durham as well, of all places. Or at least his ODI debut. I can't remember where he debuted in other places. And he got a duck. I remember watching that and just thinking, oh my gosh, there's absolutely no way this guy's the future of Sri Lanka white ball, for any ball, regardless of the colour cricket. But actually, he's developed there into quite a fluent player, right? He's got an ODI average of 50. And he scored over 700 runs. So he's becoming a fixture of the side. I suspect that it's going to be ODI cricket that is going to end up being the format that he plays the most as well. and I'm excited to see where it all lands, because we talked a bit about this when we were talking about Wilalagay and his innings in the previous episode, about it's not the prettiest player to watch, but he somehow gets there, right? He does what he needs to do.
Yeah, and what I liked about him right throughout his career, even when he was kind of in his first couple of games, he hasn't played even 20 ODIs for Sri Lanka yet, but he's always kind of had a presence about him, whether it's with the bat or he's in the field. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that he has kind of led teams right from the junior level, whether it be Sri Lanka under-19s or whether it be with Richmond College. So he does have that kind of leadership in him. So you do see him, I recall in some of the previous series as well, him going up to Dasun Shanaka, maybe going up to Kusal Mendis behind the stumps, having something to say. And that's really, I think that's also speaks to what a good environment that has been created within the Sri Lankan side, where you have youngsters like Asalanka who are comfortable coming up to a captain like Shanaka and kind of giving him some insight. His development, I think, and I 100% agree with you on the ODIs. I think it's the most suited format for him. I think generally for Sri Lanka, ODI cricket seems to be the most suited format, but definitely for a player like him, particularly, doesn't he remind you a little bit maybe of Arjuna Ranatunga, the way he kind of, I'm not talking about physically,
yeah,
but like...
I'm loath to make that comparison because I think he's probably a better cricketer.
No, but Arjuna was also, I know he turned out to be this gritty, he was known more for his kind of leadership and all of that. But even Arjuna as a schoolboy cricketer was like highly touted as someone who's going to be something special. And my dad always tells me about how, Arjuna, Ranjan, Madugala got into the Sri Lankan national side through influence, as it often is the case in Sri Lanka. I don't know how far that's true, but I guess that was kind of something
happens everywhere in the world, though, right? If you look at the conversation around Zach Crawley in the England team, there's a lot of people in England that have you believe Zach Crawley's in the England side because of influence. I'm not sure how true that is, and maybe you might be able to get yourself into the eye of the selectors, but to actually get out on the pitch, I think it's a total different, ball game, right?
Yeah, so with Arjuna, however he got into the side, he did get in as a schoolboy cricketer. And really, I think kind of, those players who are made for that, those kinds of situations, right? Pressure situations, they seem to thrive. And he turned out to be one of those. So I think in that sense, I see a few similarities between him and Asalanka. Asalanka seems to be a lot more, what can I say, like happier, but yeah, I see that kind of that character, that leadership that Arjuna had in someone like Asalanka.
Should we take a quick break? When we come back, let's talk about his marriage, because he got married the other day as well.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sarah Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI. We've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
So Estelle, I wake up on Monday morning, I'm sure it was Monday morning, to discover that three of the boys who played in the first two ODIs had got married that day. I think two got married and one had got engaged, right?
Two engaged and one married.
Oh, got it all wrong. What was going on? How come everyone was...
But I think you're technically right, because I think Asalanka kind of, they registered their marriage. So technically they are married. I don't know. Okay, I don't know anything about marriage. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was a really auspicious day, right? And we didn't know about it until it happened. There is also kind of superstition in Sri Lanka where people don't usually get married in November. I don't know if I'm right about that because it's like, I don't know how to say it in English. Malavunge Masaya. But yeah, really auspicious day. There is also a theory that marriage seems to bring luck to the players. Yeah. I don't know about that. But yeah, it was good to see him get some runs after that.
Yeah, could have done with a few marriages up in Durham if it brings luck. But there we go. it just to me, the thing I found most shocking is in my mind, he's really good mates with Pat Masunka, and I thought they needed to be at each other's weddings. But obviously,
yeah, I wonder how the players did the players attend? What happened there? I mean, split between three weddings, who went where?
Yeah, who goes where? Is it just who gets the invite first? Or I don't know. there must be some politics involved in it. It's quite. We'll never know. Maybe someone will write a book about that day when three
Maybe
players got married.
We'll get invited to some of the weddings and we will know.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe one day. Me and you could be a wedding band, maybe. Like I can play I can't actually play any instrument and you could do the singing. I don't know why I suggested you should do the singing because I've heard myself sing and that would really will send your guests home very quickly. Can we talk about Asalanka's T20 career? Because I suppose that's got to be the format he ends up playing the most, even though it's possibly the format he's not suited to. He's still quite young. He's only 25, right? So he could potentially play probably about another 10 years, you know, depending on injuries and the way other things pan out. He's kind of been accused of scoring a bit too slowly in T20 cricket. And we saw him got dropped when he lost a bit of form around the Asia Cup. But I've got a suspicion that the more T20 he plays at international and if he ends up playing franchise cricket, because he hasn't played a lot of the top-end franchise stuff, I think he could end up becoming a more efficient T20 player. Because as I say, his main trait is getting the job done, right? And I think if he ends up living in these professional environments, I think he'll get better at it. Do you think I'm right, or am I just too hopeful?
I actually disagree with you on that. He doesn't score quickly enough. I thought, and I could be like judging it off a very too small a sample, but I thought he caught everyone's eye in that T20 World Cup last year, right? And during that tournament, basically what he did and where his impact came from was that he was, with Sri Lanka losing early wickets in pretty much every game, what he did was come in during that power play and just, you know, smash a couple of boundaries and push, give some momentum to the innings. And I think that's where his impact was in that tournament in particular. And when he faltered in that area, and I don't think he should have been dropped, certainly not for not to accommodate Dhanushka Gunatilaka or Dhananjay De Silva in that middle order. When he was dropped, it was because he was not able to do that anymore. And I think part of the reason for that was the fact that Sri Lanka had a steadier opening pair who were not being dismissed in the first six overs as often as we saw in that World Cup. So he was coming in with the free field spread out a little bit more. And he just lost touch, right? And every player kind of goes through those patches. Hopefully this innings that he played against Afghanistan is the turning point. We did see him get a bit of runs during the T20 World Cup, a couple of innings where he was kind of beginning to look fluent. I think in the kind of form he was in the last World Cup, he is probably one of the best T20 batters Sri Lanka currently have in that lineup. I don't think in form you need to worry about his strike rate because he'll be striking it at 130, 140 at least.
My worry is I think he needs, as I already alluded to, I think he'd go and play franchise cricket. I think, though, he's in that position that he's in, kind of top order batsman. Yeah. It's the hardest place to get franchise contracts because essentially the two big places to go are the IPL or the PSL, right? And both in India and Pakistan, they've got a glut of top order batters, so that's the place they're least likely to get picked up. And I suppose it's just kind of bad luck, right? Because you know, if he could do what Hasaranga could do, maybe we should mention his bowling, because he does bowl occasionally from time to time. Then you know, he everyone wants a wicket taking, run scoring player, but is there's just no place in franchises for him at the moment. He's going to have to get exponentially better, I think, before people have a look at him, which is a bit of a shame, because or just become the power hitter like Barnacle has, and hope somebody, you know, gives him a shot, right? Good.
Yeah, so imagine if you can combine Dhananjay De Silva's bowling with Asalanka's batting, then you've got a really valuable asset in terms of franchise cricket. His problem now is, I don't think he's much of a bowler. He's very much a part-time bowler. But currently, if you look at international cricket, if he can develop that area into, you know, just a level where he's bowling maybe one or two overs a game, that still, I think, adds a massive amount of value. Because like you said, those top three positions in the batting order are the toughest to kind of get opportunities at. And I think even if you look at the Sri Lankan lineup, we would have plenty of batters vying for those first three spots. But then the number four, five are the ones that, you know, we really have trouble with finding players. Even at the moment, if you look at it, beyond Bhanuka Rajapaksha and Dasun Shanaka, there aren't that many options for 5-6. And number four, we don't have anybody at the moment. So if he develops his bowling, I think he will have a better chance, I think, when it comes to franchise cricket. But for Sri Lanka, I think it's got to be his batting. His batting, that kind of impact he provides, is going to be really important, particularly when you've got guys like Pathum Nisanka opening the batting, where there are games where he doesn't really get going at, or he's striking at maybe a runner ball.
Yeah. Do you think then that long-term will end up opening the batting for Sri Lanka? And I'm talking, I say that because the Mendes has got that spot nailed down at the moment, and I don't think we need to have another discussion about that. And actually, there's not a huge age difference between the two of them, right? It's not like Kissel's going to retire in the next 18 months, 2 years or something. Mm-hmm. They'll probably stick about for around the same time. But I wonder if at some point he just develops to a place that it's irresistible not for him not to open the batting.
I don't know about T20 cricket, but I think certainly in ODI cricket, we will see him moving up the order. Maybe not opening, but definitely at 3 or 4. I think he's played a lot of his schools cricket and domestic cricket in those positions. So 5 is kind of, he's kind of batting out of his comfort zone. And that works, especially on tracks like what we have in Sri Lanka, where you're not getting the 350 plus scores. But on really batting-friendly conditions, I don't know how well that'll go, because he does take a bit of time in ODI cricket to get going. And does he have the power game is another question. I think he does, but it's something that needs to be developed. But maybe not opening, but certainly moving up the order in ODI cricket is what
I hope this isn't a curse. But every time I see him come...
Yeah, like the vice-captain's like curse, right? We forgot to mention
that. Yeah, yeah. Well, what I was going to say is, and I hope I haven't cursed him now, is that obviously every time he comes out to bat, we've lost a wicket, possibly a couple of wickets, because we tend to lose wickets in batches. And I just think, cool. He's a cool guy. He's come out to the crease. He's going to be calm. He's not going to throw his wicket away. And he's just going to get us moving. I don't want to say get the job done, because I think we're still in a place where we're not winning as many games as we hope to win. Mm-hmm. But you can see him developing, or he is developing, into a match-winning player, right? Let's take a quick break. When I come back, I want to talk about that Afghanistan innings.
I don't just do this podcast. I also host Red Inca, which is a show that covers far more modern stories. We look at the trends within the game, tell stories about the modern great players, and look at what is really going on in global cricket. You can find Red Inca by searching for it in your podcast app or on YouTube, or by downloading the 99.94DM app.
I just said, Estelle, that he's developing into a match-winning player. And I think the best example of that was that Afghanistan game, right? Because when he comes out, you kind of just know he's just got to bat to the end now. He's got to see it all the way through. And he's got to, you know, if Sri Lanka are going to get over the line, he's going to be the main guy that's going to do it. And he goes out and does it. And you just look at it.
Yeah. And...
Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah, you go.
I was going to say, you just look at it and he doesn't feel stressed. It looks to me, when he's playing, it doesn't feel any more stressed than if he was, you know, coming out to bat in the 18th over of a T20 and we were batting first and we already had 220 runs on the board. It doesn't look, he just looks, he plays every ball as it comes down the track. He plays the moment and he looked, I thought he looked cool as a cucumber at some points.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, with him, he's how long has he been in international cricket, right? 2 years, 2.5 years?
Yeah.
But we've already seen
it's not even that long. It's 18 months. It's about June, July.
No, we're at the end of 22, no?
Yeah, so it's about June, July 2021.
2020, no?
No, 2021, no?
Dharam was in 2020.
Was it that long ago?
Or 2021?
Yeah, it was 2021. Okay, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing how quickly he's developed into. Like,
yeah.
He just looks like a mature player. He looks like he's been around for ages, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was talking about when I said, like, people who only watch that England series where he debuted, they would be like shocked to see that this is the same player, because we've already seen him win a couple of matches for Sri Lanka, and that's not unlike a lot of other teams, that's not something that Sri Lanka are used to. We're not used to young players coming in and, you know, in their first 18 months or 2 years of cricket, winning you a couple of games, you know, almost solo. We saw him and pressure games too. I mean, we have to admit that game against Afghanistan was a big pressure game, because not only did it, you know, have Sri Lanka's... World Cup qualification hopes kind of hanging on it, but it also meant a series loss to Afghanistan, who Sri Lanka have not played before, and who majority of people would be watching thinking Sri Lanka should be beaten, yeah. Right? So there was a lot of pressure on him in that game. We saw him performing well against Australia. We saw him even in last year's T20 World Cup, where he featured in a big chase against Bangladesh. So already he's shown kind of the traits of a player who can really go the distance. And that's why I think I told you about this yesterday as well, about his celebration. And now I was a bit sad to see it, because it felt like, you know, this guy, and I don't know how relatable this is or how many people will kind of get what I'm saying, but like this guy, I saw him making his test debut. Of course, we watched him make his ODI and T20 debut on TV. And he seemed to bring so much joy into the game. Like, he seemed to be just happy to be there. And every wicket was celebrated with a big smile and a hug. You know, he kind of, I guess, encapsulated by a lot of us follow the game, right? It's that pure love of just being there, being able to be a part of it. And when I saw that celebration of him, you know, shushing his critics, it made me sad, because, you know, someone's taken that joy from him almost, right? I don't know if that's kind of, it makes sense, but like, that's how I felt about it. I felt like this guy, he brings so much positive energy into the side that I hope he doesn't lose it because of the criticism. And I'm sure, like, being dropped from that T20 side probably took a huge toll on him, particularly because if you go back, he was dropped in the Asia Cup for a dead rubber, in which I thought was the ideal time to play him and get him. Like, there's no pressure on him, right? It's a dead rubber. Sri Lanka all already through to the final. That was the ideal game to give him an opportunity to make some runs. But of course, the selectors thought otherwise. He was dropped. He didn't play the first few games of the T20 World Cup as well, and came in eventually when there was an injury. So obviously, it's been on his mind. He's copped a lot of criticism, I guess, on social media. So that was probably why the reaction came out. But I just hope that he doesn't lose that kind of the joy he had for the game, because he does bring such a big, like a kind of that energy he brings is so important, I think, to that Sri Lankan side.
I also, going back to that dropping, I also think that the setup thought we were, I mean the Sri Lankan cricket team, the national side, were probably a little bit more further down the road than we actually were. And that actually, I still think we're in a case of people getting in the side, being comfortable that they're in the side, and getting familiar with their roles and what they're meant to do. And actually, what we don't need is too much tinkering at this moment. Of course,
yeah.
I say that different, you know, you got to play different bonus, different pitches, and you might need to, any given moment, there'll be injuries. There will always be injuries. So you've got to move things around. Things will move around naturally anyway. And that's why I think he was a bit hard done by, really, for that dropping, right? Because as you say, that would be the perfect game for him to find some form, and it just didn't. It was not to be for him, but he's come back stronger from it, right? So I suppose in a way, yeah, it's kind of all good. And as you mentioned already, it's that the curse of the vice captain, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you think about it, and a lot of people are going to laugh at this, but Dhananjay De Silva was vice captain at the last T20 World Cup, and how many games did he play?
Yeah,
zero, right?
Exactly. You don't.
And then he comes back, and he's one of the key players in this tournament where he doesn't have the vice captaincy.
I think it's one of those things where actually the public perceive that there's extra pressure on you, when in reality you're just part of the leadership group, right? You're one of the kind of senior players, and I suppose if Sharnika goes off to get treatment or something when he's fielding, then you're in theory the captain, but really, you know, Tikshana and Hasaranga set their own fields anyway. does it really matter? I'm not sure how many positives they are. I think maybe you want to stay away from being vice captain. Maybe that's the way forward.
Yeah. I don't think Sri Lanka cricket names one anymore.
Good. Can we talk briefly about his test career? Because he's had a strange test career that he has played him, but he hasn't scored many runs. And I just wonder if he seems to be like quite a pragmatic guy, and maybe he thinks somewhat similar to the way I do, which is, I don't know the point of focusing on it. You're going to play five tests next year. He's probably going to play another 20 ODIs next year if everything works out the way it should do. What's the point of focusing on it and just focus on the white ball game? I don't know, because I also do feel like he could do damage in a test side. I think he could be, if he wanted to be, a really good test batsman as well. And I think at some point that might come through. We might see that.
Yeah, I was there for his debut. It was against West Indies. And I think first ball, second ball he faced, he reverse swept one of the spinners for a boundary. And it was really, I mean, that's not the type of cricket that Sri Lanka usually play, right? In test cricket. So it was exciting to see, but I also think that he has a lot to work on when it comes to test cricket. And we did see, or at least we saw kind of Dimuth Karunaratne talking to him about it, about, you know, pushing forward too far with the bat. And he tends to do that because of the influence of limited overs cricket, of course, because he does play a lot. But you're right, I don't think he should focus too much on test cricket, because I mean, how many opportunities are you going to get, right? But if you do make it in limited overs cricket, he gets to play a lot of cricket for a long time. Financially, it's good for him. So I don't know whether he'll be focusing too much on test cricket. I could be 100% wrong, and his dream could be to be Sri Lanka's top run scorer in test cricket. But
I think it's a really pragmatic approach he's got. I've said this when we talked about the Major League tournament. Just focus on the white ball, right? That's what's going to make you money. That's what you're going to play more often than not. There's always no point, in some ways, for a player like Asalanka getting too caught up in the test game. It's a shame. And I'm not saying that I want it to be like that, but I think that's the reality of the situation. And as we know, as we keep saying, Charath Asalanka gets stuff done. And he's getting it done by scoring the runs when it matters. For Sri Lanka.
Yeah, absolutely. He's I don't doubt that he will be successful in Test cricket. If he does, I mean, he's given the opportunity and, you know, works on a lot of things that he needs to be successful. But yeah, like you said, is there any point? Right?
Should we leave it there? Obviously, we're being, you're both very excited about what the future holds for him and how it all pans out. We look forward to him scoring many more runs for the Lions over the next years, possibly decade, hopefully. Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please do rate, review, subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast. Leave the comments. I don't know if Estelle likes reading them. I love reading the comments, even if they're from my dad or cousins. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado. Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with a pro tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!